Happening right now, but yeah, I'm just gonna let this play because this song is so great. That is a podcast about movies and tambourines. It's a podcast about we're changing.
Somebody
starting today.
Tambourine.
Starting today, this is a podcast about tambourines and all the ways that they make life good.
An occasional cowbell.
I didn't even pick. You know what? That's cowbell is not the thing. It's the tambourine.
You're right. I agree. Regardless
of that SNL sketch and its popularity, it ain't the cowbell. It's the tambourine.
Mm.
Always has been the tambourine.
Well, you are a Partridge Family fan, so.
Yes, and an Archie's fan from, like, way back in the day.
True.
When I mean way back in the day, I mean when I was 5 years old.
Already a discerning.
I knew the tambourine was a thing that made life good.
Yes.
Although I didn't even pick that song today.
No.
That was your song that you picked.
Yes.
Because of why?
Because that song always makes me happy.
Well, there's a reason that song always makes you happy. Because it's fantastic.
Yes.
That song is fantastic.
Yes.
No movie correlation?
Nope, nothing.
Did you first hear it in a movie?
No. On the radio, I'm sure.
I see. Okay, so usually when you pick a song,
right,
it's got something to do with one of the movies that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, usually, because if I don't, then you go, what'd you play that for? What was that about?
Yeah, I have to ask you.
What's the connection? So
I have to always find out from you the details of these choices.
In this case, there's
choices.
No connection. I just felt like
all of your healthy choices. So you're on Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
Which is a podcast about movies and tambourines.
Yes.
You are Alonzo Duralde, you are the film critic of TheWrap.com, TheWrap.com. If you go to TheWrap.com, you'll see, and you click on reviews, his face and his glasses and his beard, his distinctive mnemonic devices, they'll pop up. Your next step after reading the review and leaving him a very happy, positive, supportive comment is to remember how to spell his name. A-L-O-N.
S.
S. Oh, because it's Spanish. If folks just knew Spanish, and the majority of Americans are about to, this would not be a problem. Although, in the past, I will say that even Spanish-speaking people have gotten your name wrong in the spelling.
Oh, at Starbucks.
Because they look at you.
At Starbucks.
But here's why, and I know this is why it happens. They look at you, and they second-guess themselves. Because they look at you and go, some white dude with the name Alonzo.
Right.
Not understanding that you are a Spaniard.
Yes, well.
And so they second guess you because they think, oh, all these white breads, they spell their name, if they are unusually named Alonzo, they spell it with a Z.
Right.
And
it's like a 19th century.
That's white the guy other confusional thing Alonzo for them probably is that they're looking at you and they're like, why is this white guy named Alonzo? And so they know better, like they know it's an S.
Right.
But they'll put a Z on your Starbucks cup.
Yeah, well.
This is a fascinating conversation that we're having.
It's riveting. You are Dave White of movies.com, and if people go to the page of all your reviews, they will see your mug on top. So,
It is a mug.
Am I?
It's more like a monster face, really.
Am I on? I feel like your mic has got all the action in mine.
My mic has lots of action. Are you being recorded?
Okay, that's better. I think, yeah.
Are you sure you were being recorded?
No, I was being recorded, but just low.
Was your volume low?
My volume was low.
But do we need to start over?
Nah.
No one cares anymore.
People listening to this show have gotten used to the
people listening to this show don't always know.
We have no idea what we're doing as far as the technical side.
Technical quality is frequently not amazing, but our content is invigorating.
It more than makes anybody could do a competently audio quality podcast,
except us.
But it takes. Only you and I can provide the kind of insights that this show regularly offers up to its listeners.
I couldn't even do the half-assed job that you do.
Yes.
Like when you leave town, I'm helpless.
Yes.
A turtle on its back.
And I have offered to teach you, and you refuse.
That's a problem. I can't be learned. I can't be tamed. You understand?
You're like the wind.
I'm a hurricane. Mm-hmm. I'm not a wind. I'm a snowicane. So the movies that came out this week are two terrible ones, and one great one.
I don't know if I'd say it was great, but it's good.
All right, then we'll compromise. It's very good.
Okay, fine.
Yes. And that movie is Warm Bodies.
Right.
And we will talk about that first.
Sure.
Because if you are not at the Super Bowl, if you're not watching the Super Bowl today, we're recording this on Sunday, you're probably at the movies.
It's a good day to go.
That's what I posted this on Facebook today. My very favorite Super Bowl Sunday was in 1996. And I went to see Michael Mann's Heat on Super Bowl Sunday. And I had the whole theater to myself. Now, keep in mind, at this time in my life, I was living in Fort Worth, Texas. And that Super Bowl happened to be...
You were living in Arlington.
No, I was living in Fort Worth.
Okay, just over the border.
No, I lived exactly in Fort Worth the entire time I lived there. I lived close to the border of Arlington and Fort Worth, but I was in Fort Worth.
Right, but when I would go visit you then, like it was literally like...
Now entering Fort Worth.
Arlington, Fort Worth border, and then your exit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I was living in Fort Worth, and that was the very last time that the Cowboys were in the Super Bowl. From that, I mean, they haven't been in the Super Bowl since then.
Right.
And it was fantastic because the streets, the freeways.
It was like the Omega Man.
Empty, yes. It was like the
Night
end
of the Comets.
Yeah, the end of the world. It was so amazing. Just whooshing right down every road. I got all the green lights.
The theater
was a ghost town. I was alone in my screening room. I'm sure, like, whatever, the Joy Luck Club or something was playing somewhere in one of the other houses, or I don't know when that movie came out, but, you know, something like that. I'm sure that had a
some
lot
lady
of,
movie.
Yeah, I'm sure the lady movie, whatever it was, without at the time, had.
Our friend David Dee pointed out that since Dallas was actually in the Super Bowl that year, that it was amazing that anyone was, the theater staff showed
surprised the theater was open. Yeah. But I had this blissful 3-hour, you know, time, because I don't care. I don't care about football.
No.
At all.
Me neither.
The wonderful thing, not only was I seeing one of the great movies of the 90s, no arguments from you.
I'm gonna argue.
None.
I'm gonna argue plenty if I feel like
none.
It.
I'm taking no guff on Michael Mann from you today, especially about Heat, which is one of the great movies of the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Because every bookstore employee can buy a fixer-upper in the Hollywood Hills like Amy Brenneman.
Look, that's not... Look, it's
scorching realism.
Don't... I don't want to hear nothing about it. I had a wonderful day that day.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
I take nothing away from that, except that I hate Heat.
So the... So Warm Bodies is what you ought to be at today, if yes. that's where you're not at
this, the Super Bowl. That would be the movie to go to see. That or Amour.
It's about zombies, which is a very tired topic. Yes. I'm done. Before I went to see Warm Bodies, I announced to him, to Alonso, that I was finished with vampires and zombies and the undead of any stripe and all the iterations of them. Like, the horror versions, the comedy versions, the romance versions, yeah, none of it.
And we're
done.
And supernatural teen romances also. Yeah,
fed up, tired of it. It needs to stop happening. And then I saw Warm Bodies, and it's really, really good.
Turns out, even when you're sick of something, somebody can still do it.
Somebody
right.
can still come along and make that thing happen for you again and make you like it. And that's what happened. It's a zombie Romeo and Juliet is what yeah. it is. And the world, there's been a zombie apocalypse. And Nicholas Holt is a teenage zombie who does not remember his name. He goes by R, because that's all he can remember. He's different from the other zombies. He has feelings and thoughts and a funny interior monologue going on at all times. He cannot really speak, although he knows a few words still.
Right.
And he is a corpse.
And he lives in an abandoned airplane.
Lives in an abandoned passenger jet.
Where he has cobbled together a really good collection of vinyl albums.
Yeah. And it's a really interesting sort of parallel to the socially awkward boy,
right?
You know, who holes up in his room with his vinyl collection, and he's a vinyl collector because that's what the socially awkward boy does. And you know, his Polaroid camera and his vintage things that he's just, you know, scavenged through thrift stores and whatever. Well, the whole world is this boy's thrift store,
right?
And so When Julie, played by Teresa Palmer, shows up and notices all the great vinyl and what great, you know, she's like, you have this vinyl. And he's got a few words because he has seen her now drop down to one knee and bullet machine gun spray all of his zombie pals. At which point he falls head over heels in love with her and his heart begins to beat again.
Right. Well, it also helps that he has eaten the brain of her boyfriend.
So he has his memories of love for her.
Right.
And she says, you've got all this vinyl. And he says, sounds better.
More
alive. So this is really nice parallel to the sort of somewhat hipstery loner outcast kind of boy.
Right.
And she's the daughter of a powerful survivalist who is sort of running the world.
Or at least this one big walled city.
Yeah.
Played by John Malkovich.
And
the guy, not the city.
Together they get to know each other in this very gentle, sweet, funny, witty, clever way that cinematically uses cliche to upend cliche. Right. And I really, really love that when that happens. When you can tell the writer-director, who's Jonathan Levine.
Yes, who did 50-50 and The Whackness.
When you can tell that someone really loves movies and wants to, it's a very playful kind of movie. And when you can tell that they are having a good time tweaking convention.
Right.
Even to the point of subverting zombie, the competing contemporary cliches of zombies, you know, there's no mythology that sticks from movie to movie. It's not like every zombie movie the zombies are all the same, and so the zombies in this movie, they're slow or they're fast. They eat brains or they eat something else from the body. They are, you know, on the verge of humanity, or they are these like creepy monster skeletons.
There are two different kind of zombies in this movie. There's the sort of slow shuffling but still look like human beings kind, and then there's the ones who basically peeled off their own skin and are like these
and got hardcore.
Yeah, creepy. Yeah. Like the other zombies call them bonies, and the humans call them skeletons.
Right.
But you know, and I mean, you could argue, I think, vampire mythology switches around all the time. But yeah, no, I like this movie a lot. I thought it was very clever. I like the performances a lot. My only caveat, and you don't agree with me on this, I feel like it...
Then I don't think you have to say it. if I don't agree with you.
Oh, shut your hole. I think it's too slow for too much of the movie.
No.
And I think that, I mean, I get the idea of it because this guy's narrating it and because he sort of shuffles along that it's supposed to be seen through his eyes, which is an interesting idea, but I think as it manifests itself into the actual pacing of the film, it's hard not to be like, okay, you know, and not that movies, all movies have to be fast and movies find their own pace and that kind of thing, but this is not, you know, Abhi Chhap Phong Vira Seth the Cool. This is a teen zombie romance comedy, and I just kind of felt like there was just, I had a bad case of the get on with it already for the first half almost. But beyond that, I love the ideas of it. I like the way it looks. I like Nicholas Hoult a lot. I like Teresa Palmer. You know, I think there's a lot
she
to
is,
recommend.
She is Kristen Stewart with a pulse.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
She kind of reminded me of Alice Eve a little.
A little bit,
yeah. But yeah, no, I liked her. I thought she was cool. And she's very capable. I mean, she's
good.
She's a machine gun wielding, you know, zombie hunter. Yeah, so I mean, I thought I could have done with maybe a little zippier pacing, but that was not enough of a deal breaker for me to not appreciate all the other great things about it and to not recommend it, which I very heartily do.
I was paying attention to the pacing because that's a thing that you're always harping about, and this movie really puts it together quickly for you. Like it I'm completely 100% disagreeing with you because it goes bang 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 at the beginning of the movie to set up the situation. And then it stretches itself out a little bit as they slowly get to know one another. And I think that's appropriate. And then it picks back up again.
But it wasn't the getting to know you parts that I thought were draggy.
That was the first 40 minutes or so.
It was, but it's the getting there and the sort of getting from plot element to plot element that I kind of felt like.
It moved just the way it should.
All right, fine, whatever.
Yes.
You live in your own little world.
My world is...
You stare into the snow globe and think of St. Elsewhere while the rest of us are out here doing our thing. So.
I have a unique way of interpreting life as it happens around me.
Yes, that's called Asperger's syndrome.
So yeah, this is really good, and it's surprising. Like February, it's February.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
The month of We Don't Care. And and that is... always a great, awesome shock. Mm-hmm. It's a genre movie, but it's a really well-made one and funny and sweet and gentle. And yes. Yeah. And for a zombie movie. Like I was telling the lady that was waiting for me. The lady that was waiting for the elevator with me after the film. Uh-huh. And that's a story that doesn't need to be told. I told her what I had just seen because she asked me. And when I said it was a zombie romance, she went, ew. And I was like, you think ew. I said, but it's not. I said, if you've never seen a zombie movie before, not only is this a PG-13 zombie movie, so yeah. It's not super gross, but it's sweet and it's funny. And she goes, no. Like, I was like, all right, you don't like movies. You're just here for whatever reason you're here, you know, to see Les Mis. Which I think she had actually just come out of.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
And kudos to our friend Tom Ford, who was the visual effects...
something.
Muck something.
He was the something of visual effects. And Shannon.
And our friend Shannon Lee Olds, who also was a visual effects something or other.
She's a special effects something too.
Yes. We don't know what they do, but they do it well.
Yeah,
so,
we'd have to go in and look at the credit thing to see.
Yeah.
Like, she's an editor.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's a...
supervisor?
Pain. Oh, wait. So what does he do on movies?
Probably a pain there, too. No, stop. He's sweet. Anyway.
Sweet is not a word.
Okay, maybe not.
That you would ever use. No.
He's a good friend.
Yeah.
Anyway, they worked on this thing, and it looks great. And, you know, when you think about, like, there are these amazing helicopter shots of empty highways.
Yeah.
Which were faked, you know.
Right, right.
And this, like, you know, this city with a wall around it. Like, all the stuff that just looks very by the by. But then you think about it, you go, oh, wait a minute, that's not really there.
Right.
So, you know, good on them.
And then there's stand-up guys.
Oh, no, hang on, just one last thing.
One more thing.
I saw Warm Bodies on Friday night with Tom on opening night at
yes.
the Arclight
yes.
at the Dome, and I told him afterwards that he...
Oh, you were in the Dome?
In the Dome, yeah.
That would be the Cinerama Dome.
Yes.
The world-famous
yes.
Cinerama Dome
on Sunset Boulevard.
Which I'm sure people who don't even live in Los Angeles have seen photographs of.
It's a big geodesic dome. You can't miss it. Yeah. Anyway, I was telling him that he needs to see Godspell sometime because, you know, they make New York look like it's completely abandoned. Mm-hmm. And they did it, you know, the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, by filming it.
On Sunday mornings.
Sunday morning at 5 a.m. or whatever, yeah.
Stand-up guys.
Stand-up guys. You can tell people what this
it's
is
It's not a documentary about comedians, unfortunately. It's about aging mobsters, and so it begins with Al Pacino getting out of jail, and Christopher Walken picks him up. Mind you, I don't even know what the character names are, because it doesn't matter, because Al Pacino is playing Al Pacino, and Christopher Walken is playing Christopher Walken, and later on, Alan Arkin turns up to play Alan Arkin. They sort of go out on a spree, because apparently there's something terrible waiting for them, but they maybe it won't, and blah, 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 blah. It is, in my review on The Wrap, I said it was kind of like when those radio stations host those all-day concerts where bands come out and do their one hit and then leave. You're pretty much seeing the Pacino, Walken, Arkin greatest hits here. In the service
they're all doing the working overtime part.
There you go. They skip right to the working overtime part. And in the service of a plot that uses nothing new or interesting or different. So if you are just in the mood to watch those guys be those guys, you know, it's not awful. I wasn't in agony watching it, but it's nothing special. And they've even just seeing those guys do their shtick, like I'd say Walken does a much better Walken in Seven Psychopaths.
Right.
And Alan Arkin gets way more to do in Argo. I mean, he's fun in this, but he's in and out of the movie all too briefly, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's not in it they don't get to him for like the first 30 minutes, and then he leaves.
And then and Pacino admittedly is not as Pacino as he might have been. I mean, he dials it down.
No, he's real low key.
This is not the hoo-ha Pacino so much. So, you know, it's not a despicable movie. It just feels very kind of like, you know, like a greatest hits album, you know.
I was confused by
what?
How? Okay, these are all guys who are meant to be what? In their late 60s, early 70s at least.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Think of the amount of incident that is packed into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They get a lot done.
In a day.
In a day. I go to like a place in one day, and then I come home.
Not everyone ages like you, David.
I go.
Pacino's been in prison.
I get in the car, and I go to the farmer's market on Monday morning, and then when I'm done with the farmer's market, I come home, and I wash all the vegetables, and I put them in the crisper, and then that's my trip out of the house.
Well, like, no one's going to make a movie about that. I hate to break it to you.
They already did. Jean Dumont.
I was going, there's that one. Don't stab me.
When I'm done with my one trip of the day, not counting the time when I have to leave at 6 o'clock every damn weeknight and go see some movie.
Yes.
But other than that, I go out and do a thing.
Okay, people in movies and are more active.
like then, you know, the next day, I'll be like, I'm going to go to Amoeba. I go to Amoeba. That's my thing for the day.
You were already an elderly shut-in.
These guys.
You're not even 50 yet.
These guys.
They go to Hua's.
They go to Hua's. Not once, but twice.
Well, they are all on Viagra.
Right. Which in turn necessitates a visit to the hospital for the 4-hour boner.
Mm-hmm.
There's
dancing.
And then they go dancing. They go. There's a variety of diner restaurants.
Yeah.
The
same one.
Going back to it. They save. They save a gang rape victim from a trunk of a car.
Vanessa Farina.
And then they organize a way for her to get her revenge.
Yeah.
So it's like I spit on your grave kind of thing that they orchestrate, and then
they steal the car.
They steal a car. They go on a joyride and they get tracked by the police and. That's a lot of things. Well, you'd be tired at any age.
Yes, but
you
know,
these guys are super old.
But that's the magic of cinema. But look, no, Pacino's getting out of prison.
I blame the script for forcing all of this stuff into like the one crazy night adventure.
Well, but there's a reason. They do explain why.
I know, but I don't care. It wouldn't happen like that. Well, and again, a movie situates itself in real life. Pretend a little bit better that you're actually okay. in real but life.
There are people out there who are lead a more active lifestyle than you do.
You know what? I do a lot of things.
They might do two things in a day. Maybe even three. It could happen.
Look, I've already done this. I've been to IKEA today. I did that.
Right.
I'm washing dishes. I'm about to make a turkey pot pie. I'm doing this podcast, so I'm very active.
Some people do three things outside of the house in a day.
That's too much.
Well, you know what? They'll make a movie about you called Sit Down Guys. No one will be seated during the tea straining sequence.
That's right. Any noises you hear in the background starting right now are because our friend and neighbor, Gary, is over here, and he's beginning to assemble the big, big dining room table that we bought at IKEA this morning.
Now, if you've been listening to this show for a while, you've been hearing this a lot.
You've been hearing the squeaky table.
No, we can't make it.
We have a 60-year-old vintage Formica dinette kind of table.
Yeah.
And it looks real cool. But now it's broken.
Yes.
And if you lean on one end of it too hard, it'll upend the entire array of food items that you have on it.
It's not particularly stable.
It's not stable anymore. It squeaks like crazy. It's served its purpose. And now we're giving it to Grey Drake.
Is she going
to
take it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's coming over to pick it up. Fabulous. And Steve is good at fixing things, so I think he's going to fix it right up.
Awesome.
We instead need a much bigger, longer table because of all the dinner parties we have. Yes. We have so many people over here eating all the time.
Yes.
So now it's being put together as we podcast.
Yes.
There you go. What were we talking about? Stand-up guys. It sucks.
It doesn't suck. It's just meh. Mm. It's very meh. What sucks is Bullet to the Head.
Oh, yeah. And you would think with a name like Bullet to the Head. In fact, I remember the first time I saw the trailer, I thought, wow, that's going to be great because it's called Bullet to the Head. And in fact, during the opening sequence, when the big bullet is coming right at your face and it busts through all the production company logos and into the title, I thought, nice, there's a bullet coming right at my head. And now
it's not even in 3D.
Now it's in my head and the movie can start, and then the movie doesn't start.
Would that fragile item be moved away from the area where construction will be happening?
Yes, that is a thing.
Okay. Why don't you go do that while I'll go do that.
You talk about what the stupid movie's about.
Okay. So Bullet to the Head is rather depressingly directed by Walter Hill, who is generally much better at doing this kind of movie. Anyway, it's based on a French graphic novel. It stars Sylvester Stallone as a hitman in a New Orleans-ish city called Crescent City. And he does a job with his partner, and his partner gets murdered because there's a setup going on. Meanwhile, the guy that Stallone and his partner killed is a former DC cop, and his partner comes down from DC to investigate the murder, and they realize that it all comes down to this one local mafioso big bad guy. So the cop and Stallone team up to take him down. And blah, 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 with the thing and the kidnapped daughter and whatever and the fighting and the shooting.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's
the plot doesn't matter. It's about bad guys and Stallone killing bad guys. And within the first few minutes, someone does, in fact, get a bullet to the head.
The first of a series.
Yeah. And then it's
not the same person.
Then it keeps happening. Like, everyone who dies dies via bullets to heads.
Yes. So if you thought John Dies at the End was a spoiler title.
Yeah. But there's so much wrong here, and it's all, honestly, Sylvester Stallone's fault.
He takes a good chunk of the blame, but I think the script has a lot to do with it, too.
It's a bad script.
It's supposed to be a mismatch.
Walter Hill is not, you know,
It's supposed to be a mismatch buddy movie along the lines of, 48 Hours, right, which Walter Hill directed.
Yes.
But, you know, as somebody pointed out, like, that movie wouldn't work if Nick Nolte constantly overpowered Eddie Murphy.
Right.
And the problem with this movie is that, like, Stallone always has to be, right, you know, the big man in charge, yeah, and right and stronger and better and faster and whatever.
Humorless about it, and his character is an actual moron. Like, there's not a thing where, you know, he ever has that sort of, like, right-wing bigot wisdom. You know, it's not like watching Jack Donaghy,
right,
on 30 Rock. It's not even like watching Archie Bunker on, you know, All in the Family back in the day. It's, right, there's nothing funny about him. He's just gross and terrible.
He's just a blowhard.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's this relentless racist dialogue going on, right?
Because the cop is Korean.
Because, yeah, because it's a... Kung Sang? Is, yes, that the guy from Fast and the Furious movies?
Or from Fast 5.
Well, he was in earlier ones, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said in my review on movies.com, this is a film that can learn a lot about movement and action and excitement and race from
Fast 5.
From the, yeah, Fast and Furious movies. But Stallone, actually, in one point, says to him, blah, 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 that samurai stuff. And other guy goes, that's Japanese. I'm Korean. You know, you could try to get it right. And he says, that would be like me telling you that my favorite Italian food is tacos. And Stallone goes, that's a bad comparison. I'm like, no, that's actually a very apt comparison. You idiot. And that's the end of that scene. There's nothing...
That's the writing. That's not Stallone's fault. What is Stallone's fault is his terrible performance.
Again, Stallone is the boss of what he does. If he weren't, he wouldn't do crap like this. Mm. And so he's one of those actors that gets what he wants, I guarantee you. And he thinks he's got juice now because of Expendables. Mm. And reality is that The Expendables was not about Stallone necessarily. The Expendables was about...
I love the 80s.
Was about that destroy all monsters kind of thing where all the monsters come together to fight, you
in
know.
In one movie, yeah.
In one movie. The only good thing that Stallone has done in the past 10 years was that reprehensible Rambo movie that was so great. So much extreme violence and killing in that Rambo reboot that... It really was one of the great movies of that year.
Oh, God.
Just a terrible, terrible, hideous kind of...
Don't forget the queasy homophobia.
Whatever. I'm not interested. Yeah. And so,
of course you're not.
Since then, he has been boring. Even The Expendables, which I was looking forward to it being somewhat like that crazy Rambo reboot, mm-hmm, not great. And The Expendables 2 is bad, bad, bad. And this is just even worse.
But the Expendables,
so he's down that slide again.
The Expendables are at least sort of entertaining in a, I can't believe I'm watching this kind of way. And this is just inept.
But you wanted it to be more. I wanted it to be more.
Well, sure, yeah.
I needed it to be more full of stuff. Definitely more violent. These movies only exist as conduits for really cool violence.
Right.
And unless you're going to give me that... I don't have time or the energy to pay attention. It's not something I want to see.
This movie does build up to one. It's funny, like you know, we've had a new Stallone movie and a new Schwarzenegger movie. We're about to have a new Bruce Willis movie. Both the Stallone and the Schwarzenegger movies end up with a big mano a mano fight scene.
Yes,
and the
which
one,
in real life both of them would lose.
Of course. The one in The Last Stand was pretty good, and the movie was rotten in a lot of ways, but that moment sort of made up for a lot.
I enjoyed The Last Stand, but whatever.
This one, also pretty good, except, again, obviously there's no way Stallone would win because he's fighting Jason Momoa.
Who was Conan from the failed
Conan reboot.
Conan reboot.
And he's the one guy in the movie who gives any kind of like
intensity. That guy's a monster. Like, yeah. He's a big side of beef.
Yeah.
And he would decimate Sylvester Stallone.
Totally.
If they have an axe battle, which is fun to watch. But, you know, the movie ain't called Axe in the Face. It's called Bullet to the Head. So,
but Momoa is the one.
Stallone wins.
The one guy who brings spoiler.
Yeah.
Momoa is the one guy who brings any level of intensity
right
to this movie.
Yes.
At all. Everybody else just sort of seems to be kind of floating through it, you know. And the twists are so predictable. And the whole like all the New Orleans ambience is such. The most obvious kind you can come up with, like Zydeco, you know. And
there's a funeral down the street.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know, it's like, oh God, you know.
It's when the Saints Go Marching In is always playing in the background.
Yeah, you know, why not bring out, you know, some old voodoo priestess with a milky eye while you're at it, you know. Why am I blanking on her name? Who's the Lisa Bonet? Give us Lisa Bonet covered in chicken blood. Something.
That's all the movies for this week.
Yeah.
Except for
February.
The Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia, which I'm still currently in the middle of watching.
Mm-hmm.
They're releasing it into approximately 3 theaters this weekend.
And it's on demand.
After this big buildup, like, oh, it's going to be the big sequel to The Haunting in Connecticut, which was a modest hit, I assume.
If
that. You remember that one? The one with the poster of the kid with the giant chanterelle mushroom coming out of his mouth.
I thought it was a piece of driftwood. Yeah. Yes.
And and this one, it's the beginning of a franchise in which there is a Haunting in Connecticut for each of the 50 states.
Yes, it's like the Sufjan Stevens series of records.
Georgia, as someone said on the Facebook, Georgia Ghoul. I wish I had thought of
with
that.
With Jane Fonda and Lindsay
I can't
Lohan.
Remember now who said that to me. But they put it on demand, too. If you want to see...
Haunting in Connecticut 2, colon...
Beloved. Then... Which is what it's about slavery.
Right.
Yeah. They do this thing. I've watched like the first 40 minutes of it this morning, and they do this thing where they every time they say something that's historical, they tell you what it is. Like, when they learn that the house they moved into, the haunted house they moved into, was a stopping point on the Underground Railroad.
Somebody has to come out and explain what the Underground
Railroad. The main woman in this house goes, this was where the Underground Railroad passed? When they used to bring... escaped slaves up north. Like, yes, the very same. And there's this African American preacher who's talking to her about it. He's like, yes, and they followed the moonlight to freedom. Like, he says it just like that.
They should just pop up video.
Yeah. You know?
The Underground Railroad, established by Harriet Tubman, was used.
There's like captions for stupid people. And that would make these scripts so much leaner, you know.
Exposition track. I like it.
DVD pick?
Yes.
What you got?
Okay, so you know how, maybe you don't know, I think you know. A lot of the studios have been starting doing this thing now that's MOD, Movies on Demand. The premise basically being like, rather than print up a bunch of DVDs and send them out to all the Walmarts and Best Buys and see if they sell or not, for the really kind of more back catalog titles that have a smaller, you know, sales base, but they still want to make them available, they basically have a thing where they don't make one until you order it.
Yes.
So, like, that's what Warner Archive is, and Sony's been doing it, and several studios. So now Fox has introduced their own MOD titles, and I was going through the list to see what struck me. And the one that leapt out at me was this insane...
Every time you say MOD, I think of SOD.
What's that?
Stormtroopers of Death, this band from the 80s that was really good.
Well, whenever people talk about VOD for video on demand, I first think of Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah.
Anyway, so going through the Fox list, the movie that leapt out at me was this nutty late 60s.
Gary Cotty just shook his head in disgust at you.
Yeah, well, whatever. This satire called The Day the Fish Came Out. It's set in the future. So
is that the one about the basketball team and the astrology?
No, that's the fish that's in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I
saw that one.
I'm sure you did.
I saw it in the theater.
I'm sure you did. Did you see Fast Break with Gabe Kaplan, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is about there's this like Greek island, and there's this lost like nuclear weapon, and all these soldiers show up, but since it's a resort, they have to go in disguise as gay guys, and it's this.
Ooh, Mary.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. Candace Bergen is in it wearing these like big crazy like sunglasses of the future.
Wait. Gary Cotter, come here. Say something like a vintage gay. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyway, this movie is redonk, as the kids say. And
the kids don't say that anymore.
They don't?
Okay, no, that's well. You're an old guy who thinks that.
Fine.
Yeah. I don't say that.
Okay, no one says that.
Anyway, no one says that anymore.
This movie is 10 different kinds of stupid, and I highly recommend it because it's quite likely you've never seen it or even heard of it, and it's just the kind of movie that will make you, your jaw will unspring. What do you got?
I have 1998's Vive l'Amour.
Okay.
It is not a French film.
No.
It is a Taiwanese film.
Right.
From, and I always say his name wrong, but whatever. Chai Ming Lang, I just blanked. That name is spelled TSAI.
We'll have a link on our
Ming Liang. Yeah,
we'll have a link on our Facebook page.
And so, yeah, we'll have a link. It's a nearly wordless movie. It is very little dialogue in this.
Go
film.
On.
And it's about three different people who occupy a film. Occupy a film. They occupy the same apartment, only at different times. And they have no real sort of contact with one another.
So it's like the lake house.
So it's a... You ruin everything. You ruin everything. All right.
Excuse me, Fish, you saved Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's the... one of them is a... one of them is a real estate agent. One of them sells cremation urns, and it's this strange film about like urban isolation and loneliness, and in a place that lacks, you know, any personal space.
Taipei? And, is it set in Taiwan?
Yeah. And how these people manage to still remain isolated and lonely, even though they are in
a shared space.
Huh. And a lot of Chai Ming Lang's films are about that. They're about people who very quietly and very very. In a very melancholy way, are seeking that, you know, connection to one another, and either they just miss it, or they never get it, or they get sex, and don't realize that that's not what they want. In one of his movies, I think it's The River. Is it The River or The Hole? One about the hole in the apartment floor. One of the main characters is a gay guy who goes to a bathhouse and winds up having sex with someone who turns out to be someone he knows very well and in fact is related to. But he doesn't realize it's happening when it's happening. But this movie is deeply about, you know, the idea of loneliness, and ends with the single greatest sequence of crying that I have ever seen in a film. A woman, one of the main women, she sits on a park bench. And the final 6 or 7 minutes of the movie is one shot, one take of her crying. And it is unlike anything you've ever seen. It is a beautiful, beautiful movie. It's a lot of people haven't heard of it. It's called Vive l'Amour, V-I-V-E.
Vive l'Amour.
I don't, you know, I'm not French.
No. My favorite crime.
You really, really, really. I know every time I recommend something like this, I know that 80% of the people listening to this are like, no.
I don't want to see that.
No. But do it!
Fine, whatever, Day White. My favorite crying sequence would have to be Juliet Stevenson in Truly Madly Deeply.
Well, yeah, that's good, too.
Where she's at the therapist, and she's like crying, 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 and then she stops, and she goes, okay, enough of that.
Well, that's got a comic, like, bump at the end of it.
Yes, but it only works because you've been so
right.
invested in the actual, you know.
The screen goes black after this woman cries. I mean, like, that's the end. And I'm not giving the ending away by telling you this.
Spoiler!
Yeah.
Okay, letters. We gets them.
Okay, hang on. I'm trying to clear the decks. We've been spotty about responding to mail lately. And I will say also one other thing. We've been getting some very long emails from people that I just can't read on the air because it will take like 15 minutes.
Well,
so what I'm going to do is I'm going to respond to you personally, privately off the air.
Sometimes we've posted those on our Facebook page with the permission of the person who sent them.
Okay. Well, we'll work that out.
Okay. But
if you wrote us a really long email and you haven't heard it like read on the show, it's because you're long-winded. That's what it is.
Anyway, this isn't the Mahabharata.
We're very grateful to get all the mail we can.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening.
All right. So here is... there's that one. No. That one. No. Okay. This is a cleanup from December.
Okay.
This is from Matt, and he sent us his top 10 of the year.
Uh-huh.
Top 10 of the of 2012. Yeah. Dread 3D.
Wait, did we read this one?
I don't know.
I think you've read this one.
I don't think I did.
I think you did. Unless somebody else put
3D. I don't think I read this one. Okay. I think someone else had Dread 3D on their list, too.
Okay, go on.
The Master.
Mm-hmm.
The Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Argo.
Mm-hmm.
Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Mm-hmm.
He describes that as a blare of sheer beautiful direction, which I can sort of agree with.
You know,
in terms of how beautiful
it is. It's gorgeous, certainly, yeah.
Keep the Lights On.
Yeah.
And his comment is, I still like girls.
Good for you.
I think it's interesting that you people are very sort of like...
like they have a pass of not seeing gay movies if they aren't
gay.
Yeah,
like it's like there are people out there who'll be like, "Well, I'm not black, so I'm not going to see this black movie."
Right.
I'm not gay, so I'm not going to see this gay movie. Like that, as though no one has anything to teach you,
right,
about life,
or that there's no common ground.
There's no, So you know, good for you, dude, for seeing the gay movie.
Right.
Basically, the best gay movie that came out last year. Right.
Narrative. Yeah.
Yeah. Safety Not Guaranteed.
Loved it.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln.
Yeah.
This Is Not a Film.
Yeah, good list.
Thank you, Matt. And he says, P.S. Have yourself a movie little Christmas. So, yeah, that letter came in December. For some reason, I don't know why I didn't read it.
I don't either.
Before the... okay, this is one of the long ones.
Yeah, the long ones, just contact them and say, is it okay if we just post it on
Yes. Okay, this one we've already read because it was a Parting Glances. Didn't we talk about that?
I don't know. Are you not, do you not have a system?
I do, but I got...
Mister, I have a system for everything?
I had one for a bit, and then I, you know, Christmas really screwed up my system. Okay, this is from Adam. This is his linoleum knife list. He says, now mind, this list of movies is unique in that these films aren't representative of my necessarily favorite films or my good taste. These represent the films that I remember going to see in theaters and on early cable in my childhood. So let's say from 1979 to 1990. Barbarella.
Awesome.
Suspiria. Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. Xanadu. Which is honestly, it's a terrible movie.
But it's a... very watchable.
It's a very watchable, terrible movie. I saw Xanadu in theaters when I was a kid.
I somehow didn't. I don't know why.
I was in high school when it came out in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And I went with my friend Jeanette.
Mm-hmm.
And it was us and like a guy who sat in the back. Now, mind you, this is in Roswell, New Mexico, where there's not a lot to do.
Right.
In 1980.
And still nobody wanted to see
And there's still not a lot to do in Roswell, New Mexico. And still nobody wanted to go to see Xanadu, even though it was a thing to do in Roswell during those 2 weeks that it played.
Yeah, I don't know why I went to see Sgt. Pepper's in the theater. I don't know why I didn't go see Xanadu.
Here's what happened. During the animated sequence when they turn into fish or whatever.
Yeah, the Don Bluth thing. Yeah.
The guy who was behind us, about 10 rows behind us, starts doing this. Like these long raspberry noises. Like raspberry farty kind of noises. He just keeps doing it through the entire song. And I remember Jeanette and I laughing because the guy kept making these like super loud noises. It was great.
Look, say what you want about Xanadu, it has Suddenly in it.
Well, that's the moment. That's the song that they play during the animated.
Yeah, it is. No, Suddenly is when they're roller skating around the record studio and they're doing the fake.
I've only seen it.
The fake weather and the fake, you know, building rooftop. It's like the scene in Singing in the Rain where they're on the set.
I saw it once in the theater and then again when you screened it in Dallas at the Dallas Film Festival.
USA Film Festival.
I screened it. I saw it there.
Really?
When you showed it again.
I've seen it.
A huge crowd of people that showed up.
I've seen it a lot.
I know you have.
I just missed.
Because I know you and your kind.
Cinematheque just did the triple feature of Xanadu Roller Boogie and Skate Town USA.
If you ever get a chance to see Roller Boogie and Skate Town USA, you oughta, because they're demented, both of them.
But Xanadu's better than either of them.
All right. Popeye.
I still need to see it. Bibbs gives me a hard time for not having seen it because he says it's his favorite Allman movie, and I think that's insane. But then I have to see it so I can fully make that argument, but I still think he's insane.
He's being provocative.
Yeah, I think so.
Star Trek 2.
Okay, yeah.
Gremlins.
Yes.
E.T.
Sure.
An American Tale. No. No, that's the kind of movie that you did like because you're a list? Child. No.
No, okay.
I don't think we did. Right. Batteries Not Included. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. This is like a 70 on my scale.
I'll go 80. I'll give him everything but Batteries Not Included in American
Tale. We may have already done this list
once before. I think, American Tale is going. You got to get it together, Dave White. Here we are not reading some people's emails and reading other ones twice. That's not cool.
All right, here's one.
You're being redonk.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. A lot of these are responses to other emails that were sent before. Okay, here's from Jonathan. Okay, no, we did read this one already. Sorry. I'm getting to it.
Yeah, brother.
Hang on, there's a couple more in here. There are very many, actually.
Now it's driving me crazy to try to remember what song it is that they are singing during the animated sequence.
Okay, so this is from Bill in Las Vegas. He's giving us his spork list. That's what he calls it.
Oh, right, because it's not knife.
They're all movies I can watch over and over, and I do watch them over and over. I have the DVD of each. I won't bog the list down with standards like Indiana Jones or Back to the Future. Here's a list. Real Genius. Which is this thing that you are constantly talking about.
No, I'm not. It's just, here's the thing. I love this movie. I've always loved Real Genius. And then there was a reference to Real Genius on Happy Endings this week. And I watched it with Dave, and then I was reminded anew, because I always forget this, that Dave's never seen Real Genius, and I am clearly slipping on the job and have to get you to watch Real Genius.
It's not that I've been avoiding it.
No,
it's
I know.
You just missed it, you know.
All right, well,
I've lived with you now for 16 of the 17 years that I've been your paramour.
Yes.
And about once every 7 to 8 months, a reference to Real Genius will pop up in the world, and it will confront you, and you'll be like, Real Genius, blah, 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 Real Genius. And I'll be like, yeah, I still haven't seen it. And you go, what? And then we have the, I must show you Real Genius sometime. And then you don't, because you fail me.
Fine. Look, it's on Netflix streaming, but it's not Letterboxd, so I will borrow Kittredge's DVD. I'm sure he has it. He's the only person I know who's a bigger Real Genius fan than I am.
Not surprised by that. Big Trouble in Little China.
Still never seen it.
Really?
Yeah. I almost went to see it at CineFamily last week, but it was at midnight.
Dune.
No.
Oh, that's funny. Labyrinth.
The Worm. The Spice. Desert Planet. Dune. Labyrinth is kind of crazy, but it's fun. Interestingly yeah. crazy.
All three Evil Deads.
Sure.
Crawl.
No.
Crawl is kind of fun.
No,
it is. Crawl is kind of fun. Better Off Dead.
Yes, of course. Sure.
Blade Runner.
Yes.
Yeah. He says when it comes out on Blu-ray, I will be adding Skyfall to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I've got that David Bowie song from Labyrinth stuck in my head. Try to get me out of here.
And that's it. That's all the letters that are short enough to read on the
air. I see. Yeah. As far as you know. But
no, I just went through the whole list. I went through the whole list.
Get it together. This is your one responsibility for the show.
Oh, wait. Here's one more. This is from Tim. Hi. You mentioned the little short white lady who stormed the Oscar stage and took over the mic.
Yes.
Roger,
I forget his name, the director of God Loves Uganda won a couple years ago for a short film, and he got up and accepted it, and then this lady who was his producer sort of barreled up there and kind of pushed him out of the way and took over the thank you speech.
Tim says, that would be my ex. I came out and ruined her life, so blame it all on me. That'll do it. Gays are treacherous.
That's true.
They will ruin your life.
You know how bitchy fags can be.
Hey, well, this is a clean podcast. You can't say bad swears like podcast.
I think we're allowed.
Are we?
I think so.
I don't know. It's the slur.
Yeah, but we get to say it.
I say it every day.
I know.
About like 10 times a day.
You usually say it while you're like running somebody over.
About other people who are bothering me. Yes. Straight or gay?
Dave White.
I'll call you that name.
Gay basher.
Yeah. we're done.
Are we done?
Yeah, we're done.
Goodness. Okay. Well, as always, we thank you for listening. And we recommend that you check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this program on iTunes, and if you haven't already left us a review, a positive one, please do. It helps other people find the show, and we really appreciate it. You can stream the program on Stitcher Radio or at thelounge.com. Please like our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter, at LinoleumCast. You can also follow us separately. I'm at A. Duraldi, A-D as in David, URALDE, and Dave is at D. Leland White, all one word. You can check into the show at getglue.com, and you can drop us a line with any thoughts or recommendations or top 10 lists of your own at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you, and please tell your friends about the show. We are, you know, we're in, was episode 102 or some, 3 some now? Like and. That. You know, we're slowly making our way in the world, and very, very, very slowly.
Very slowly.
But we appreciate the word of mouth. So, you know, if you like the show, if you know people who would like this sort of nonsense.
And if you hate it, shut up.
That too. That would help a lot. Anyway, thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.